for one another. And we hear about your faith and we boast about you. Some of you regulars might want to put a few caveats in that, but that's how we feel. Yeah, and not that we're jealous, it's just that when we come to meet with you, like I'm meeting with you now, I feel a great privilege in being here with you. I also feel the significance of it because this is a time of rest, and rest is really important. God did it himself, and I want you to rest now. So I intend to use your time wisely. Your time is important. Ravi Zacharias told this joke about the British Isles and the gospel coming to the British Isles and how different peoples in the British Isles responded very differently. And he says that the English liked it because they could talk about it. The Welsh liked it because they could sing about it. The Irish liked it because they could fight about it. And the Scots loved it because it was free. Now, I don't know why you love it. Each of you will have your own reasons. But I think a lot of you will relate to my sense that I want to convey today. And for hundreds of millions of people the world over, they love it because nothing answers the needs of the human heart better than the gospel and the word of God. Now, if you take anything from our time today and you take that, then my task at least has been, you know, is almost complete. So like I said before, we're going to just move through a few different moments. So what we're going to do this morning, just in this talk now, we're going to talk about what is the heart and why should you keep it in mind. And we're just going to move through those sort of phases, biblical support and sort of a psychological reality. But what I want to do is get us off talking to each other. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get you to talk to the people next to you about what the word heart might mean in these circumstances. So I'm just going to roll these up every 30 seconds. Turn to the person next to you and what does that mean, that sentence? As it comes back on at some point. Okay, we might go to the next one. The way to a man's heart is through his stomach. Okay, we'll go to the next one. This is from Shakespeare. But a good heart, Kate, is the sun and the moon, or rather the sun and not the moon, for it shines bright and never changes but keeps his course truly. What might heart mean there? Okay, we might go to the next one. The heart of the matter is blank. Doesn't matter what you put in the blank, what does that sentence mean? She took his comments to heart. Last one. Oh, the last one is he had a heartfelt commitment to the cause. Had a heartfelt commitment. Okay, anyone want to make any comments? Any observations or comments that you want to share? Yeah. Go ahead, Mitch.
A lot of them speak to the core or inner being.
Yeah, the core or inner being. Yep. Absolutely. Anyone else?
Sensitive.
Sensitive. Yep. Absolutely. I often think of the burning bush when I'm speaking to people and how I'm approaching sacred ground. It's always sensitive. And I have to be careful because it's an honourable space for me to be asked into. Any other comments or observations? The heart dictates. Yeah, that's a lovely phrase. Thank you. We'll come back to that theme. They're all there. Let's have a look. Okay, this video should go for 3 or 4 minutes. Let's see what happens. We're just going to need to check on the sound, I think. Oh, we don't know if we have sound. Okay. We'll skip that. A video without sound may not be so exciting for everyone. Okay. We'll come back to it. So this is the way that works. The first 7 uses of the heart in the Bible illustrate some of the stuff that we've just shared, right? So in chapter 6 of Genesis, it uses it in 2 consecutive verses. God saw that every inclination... Oh, no, we'll come back to it in a second. Thank you, though. Does it work?
It might
work. Okay. God saw that every inclination of the thought of in human hearts was wicked all of the time. And then just a verse later, God says, in his heart, he was deeply troubled. And this says to us several things. One is it says that human beings have hearts. It just sort of puts it out there, doesn't it? And the second thing is God has a heart. Now, the interesting thing was, in line with the word dictate, is from hearts come things. From hearts come inclinations, and from hearts come thoughts, and from heart comes trouble, or feeling troubled, or great feelings. So out of that sense, if you think of the heart like this, out of the heart comes stuff, thoughts, inclinations, feelings. I would add to that behaviours. I'd add to that physical expression or physical symptoms, is this sense that the heart is dictating things and out of the heart stuff comes. Now, the next thing is it gets pretty easy because these words depict an opt-in process. So God said in his heart after he smelt the aromas from the sacrifices that Noah had made, he said, never again, God said in his heart, never again will I curse the ground. And then one of the servants prays in his heart when he's looking for a wife for Isaac, and then up pops Rebecca. So you see here there are opt-in processes. You can say in your heart or you can pray in your heart, and in parentheses what we're saying is you may not say things in your heart and you may not pray in your heart. So the first one is about things coming from the heart. The second thing is about an opt-in process, and this is where it gets a little bit dark, but it's important to remember, drawn and set. This is about Dinah becoming a victim, really. And Shechem has his heart has his heart drawn to Dinah. And then, of course, Shechem's father approaches Jacob and says, my son has his heart set on your daughter. Please give her a hand. So it gets dark there, and that's really important to establish as well. There are 2 things with that. One is there's a dark side of our hearts that we need to take seriously. They get set on things. That's an important part of it. So you saw that in that Shakespeare quote, is that it drives us. A good heart, Kate, is the sun and the moon. No, it's more the sun, because by it you keep your course truly. And that's what these themes are about, set and drawn. But it's also another quality that's in our hearts. Sometimes our hearts just aren't right. They can get set upon the wrong things. And that's the definition of evil, a direction that's based upon a goal that's the wrong thing. And the last one is sank. This is a fabulous part of Genesis, towards the end of Genesis, where Joseph is speaking to all but one of his other brothers. And, of course, there's a famine and they want some food and they bring silver, and then he sends them all home with the food, and they open their bags when they're almost home and they see the silver and their hearts sank. So there's an affective component. Their emotions are there. So you see this? There's stuff coming from straight out of our hearts effortlessly. There's stuff here about an opt-in. You can say things in your heart or you cannot say things in your heart. You can pray in your heart or you cannot pray in your heart. And this is about it. Hearts are about an orientation and they're about feelings. Now, the Greek word is very similar. It's about the affective centre of our being. It's this thing that's deep down and emotions spring from those things. Let's see if we can get this. Should we have a try at this video? Okay, here we go. No, we don't. Okay. All righty. Okay. We'll wiggle some knobs. I'm a hopeless wiggler, so I wouldn't trust myself with these. I have a friend, Jonathan. He works for the CSIRO. He's a really smart cookie. And I had to say to him, oh, Jono, I'm not a technophobe. I'm not scared of anything. I'm a techno loser. I just don't get it. So I wouldn't fancy myself fiddling with those knobs. If we can't get it to work, that's okay. We might take another stab at it after, maybe between the talks. Now, this is where we want to ramp things up. And I do hope you sense that from a biblical perspective, this is really important. Do you notice these words to a common proverb? Above all else, guard your heart, because everything you do flows from it. Do you hear those words? Above all else. You feel the gravity of that? I'm not sure if we preach hard on this sort of issue. But of course, it's so central, isn't it? Love the Lord. What's the greatest commandment? Well, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, soul and strength. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart. There it is. One of my kids asked me the other day, well, how do you know that if you're a Christian? And my mind went to Romans 10:9. And I said, well, if you confess with your lips, which means that if you can afford to make these things public, but also that you can, and people often neglect this bit, believe in your heart that Jesus died, you're saved. But what does that mean, to believe in your heart? Well, it's going to include a lot of the themes that we just shared. So what I want you to do is get a sense of it. It's a part of the Bible, but it's actually a part of the Bible that has a lot of weight. And because of that, we ought to give it a lot of weight also. So we have a kind of definition that we use at work, and it involves this. The heart has three big domains. It involves the affections and all of their consequences. Really, it's about love and the impact of love on us. So love is the interpersonal process, and the heart is kind of like the vestibule, is kind of like the area on which love impacts. And then, of course, there's directions. Often the things that we have affections for give us directions. So whatever you love, if you were to say you love, what do you love to the person next to you? I love doing this. Chances are that that will lend itself to pursuing that thing. So often the affections that we have give us directions. And the direction that we have in life is almost synonymous with identity, who we are. So the values that we have and the things that we pursue lead us to call ourselves a particular thing. It is our substance, like we said, the heart of the matter. It's the truth about us. And linked to these sort of things are our choices, our wills and our motivations. So these things are kind of like based on biblical principles, but they also have a good fit with what I observe for people who come to see me and what my peers observe as well. We are centrifugal beings. So whatever is in your heart flows naturally out from it. to all the different domains that we have. So this is a map that we use at work and my colleagues use. And it contains heaps and heaps of information that we end up putting all over the place. But the red ones, which don't come up so clearly, I'll point to them now, as the central part is the spirit. Outside of this is the heart. And then there's the mind, and then there's the physical. Now, out of these deep sectors here, see this love, truth, control, out of these sectors here flow information very, very easily to all the different domains, to mood, to thinking, to behaviour, to our bodies, and to our motivations. It just flows out naturally. You never have to put effort into this. Have you ever come across an anxious person and said, you're feeling anxious? And they go, yeah. And you go, well, I really want you to start avoiding things. You don't have to tell them. They're already doing it. It just flows out naturally. Yeah. The same with their body. For an anxious person, you never have to say to them, oh, listen, what I want you to do is feel really unsettled. Maybe your heart rate, see if you can get your heart rate up, see if you can change your breathing, maybe get sweaty palms. I want you to see if you can work away at that. It's already happening. These things flow out just naturally without any effort at all. And that's what it means by a centrifugal being. What is on your heart just gets pulled out naturally. All of these things, however, have their own impact. They often bend back on the heart as well, but they just flow naturally out of it. So it's really important. You can see in this picture that what we're trying to do is we're trying to get to this epicenter. We're trying to work away in that sort of space. Okay, here's a heart test for you all. What I want you to do is just think quietly about these questions. You don't have to answer them, but what I want you to do is just read through these questions yourself, but then talk to the person. Don't give the answers to the person, but talk to the person next to you about how it felt or what it was like for you to address these questions. So just have a look at these questions now. Okay, and when you're ready, just talk to the person next to you about what it's like to address these questions. Okay, anyone want to volunteer what that was like? There's a reason why I didn't want you to share content. I want you to share content to these actual answers to each other. But I don't want people to rush at this. There are some people come to see me and they want to rip straight into it. And they talk about their heart and they plow straight into it. And there are other people that don't tell me what's on their heart for 6 months. And it's my job to respect that process. And so what I wanted to do just now is I didn't want you to see how I said I'd just talk about what it's like to answer the questions. You don't have to give the answer to the question because I don't want you to have that choice taken away from you. Talk about what's on your heart in your own time, in your own way, with your own schedule, not someone else's. Now, having said that, did you answer the question what it was like to look at these questions? Yeah. Bit fragile. Yeah, very common, isn't it? Anyone else? Yep. Wow. Yeah, yeah. Great. So one, noticed that you sort of zoomed out like a camera, like zoomed back on a camera, and you saw a more expansive view when you started looking at these questions. And sorry, what's your name?
Faith.
Faith, you were talking about a similar sort of thing. It sort of brought up feelings. Yep. Anyone else?
Yeah.
Yeah. It can, as you approach these questions, the same sort of vulnerability. It can be unsettling as you approach these questions. We are on sacred ground. It's like the bush that's burning, and we have to take off our sandals. You can see how that. You see what we've just dealt with is just a live example of what the heart is like, and what naturally flows out of the heart primarily is emotion. So we speak about vulnerability, we speak about fragility, we speak about emotions coming up. That's the lingua franca of the heart. The heart speaks an emotional language. Before our kids tell us, I'm really upset that my sister stole my toy, Mum, and I really appreciate it if she'd cease doing that, what do? They cry immediately. Bang. Out it comes. Why? Because that's the language of our hearts right from when we're tiny, is emotion. Something happens to us at a deep level and we get emotional. But why keep it in your mind? I mean, really? Fragility, vulnerability. You don't have to, do you? I mean, and truth be known, you don't have to. So why should you? There are many other things you keep in your mind. Why don't you keep your body in your mind? That ain't such a bad thing. We know that getting fit, sleeping better are going to be really good strategies for life, and I encourage you to do those things. It's not without its wisdom to keep that in your mind. You should keep your behaviour in your mind. The good Lord knows that I keep the behaviour of my children in my mind a lot of the time because I want them to behave better. But you might keep your behaviour in your mind as well. This is a very appropriate thing to do. You might keep your mind in your mind. This is getting a little bit chaotic, but you know what I mean. It's going to be good for you to learn a different musical instrument as you age. It's going to be good for you to, I don't know, do crosswords and that sort of stuff. Learn a different language because that will protect your brain as you age. That's not without its wisdom. You could even keep a topic in your mind, which is quite important. And it's really important that some of us, if not all of us, keep the environment in our mind. It's quite appropriate. So why should we do that? Well, if we don't, we're going to neglect an opportunity. The foundational need of the heart is connectedness. And connectedness is so potent if you get it right. I wanted to find an example of just how potent it is. So I came across this study. It's done by a lady named Joan Kaufman. She was at Yale. And it's a study about 101 kids, just under half, I think, were taken out of foster care, and the other half were control groups. And the half that were taken out of foster care, or were put in foster care rather, were put in foster care by the state because what they were enduring at home was just horrible. Neglect, abuse, parents or caregivers in and out of jail, drugs and alcohol. Whatever the combination in their household, it was that bad that the state became aware of it and they were pulled out of their family home and they were put in foster care. Now, this is where the interesting thing happens, is this lady and her colleagues examined these kids and she examined them for their genetic sensitivity. These ones here are the more robust kids. These ones here have a moderate degree of sensitivity. And these ones here are quite sensitive. And here is depression scores. Now, as you can tell, so these are all the kids who have been impacted on. These are the kids in foster care. As you can tell, the more genetically sensitive you are, the more likely you are to suffer depression if you go through hardship. That's a no-brainer. That is not a new finding. It's just a confirmation of an old one. But this is where it gets interesting. There's monthly or more dose of something that as it increases, so the depression score drops, even when the kids are becoming more sensitive. So this black line here is about an infrequent dose, semi-annual or less dose, of this one thing in particular. And this graph here is a more frequent dose across here. And what we can see is that these things, the depression score drops when we have a regular dose. So what's this one thing? Well, it looks as though it's an antidote, and I'll tell you why. It's because this score here is actually only a little bit above the control group sensitive kids. Do you get that picture? The control group sensitive kids are the sensitive kids who don't come from bad families. They come from decent families. And this score here, the sensitive kids who have been through a lot in their lives and put into foster care, that score, that depression score, is only a little bit above the sensitive kids who were in normal families. So this thing here, this antidote here, wiped out almost all of the effects of poor treatment that these kids got from others. Can you imagine if you had an antidote like this? I mean, for all of the people, for all of us here who have been through bad things, and that is a significant portion of us, it is not all of us. There are many people here who have been blessed by good families and good parents and don't struggle with mental health, and that is terrific, and I'm glad for you. You still need to go in, back, up and forward, and I'll tell you why in a few moments. But for those of us who have been through bad things, there is an antidote that is incredibly powerful that almost has the potential to wipe out all the bad things. Well, what's the antidote? It's the presence of, ta-da, positive support. And this positive support reduced the risk associated with poor treatment and the genetically sensitive genotype, which is this one here, such that the maltreated children with this profile had only minimal increases in their depression scores. It's quite amazing, isn't it? It's an amazing study. I was astounded about this, so I wrote to the author. Dr. Kaufman, I'm still a little bit astounded. Can you confirm for me my reading of your paper titled blah, 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 blah. My reading of your paper is that the presence of positive supports, even as little as once a month, reduce the risk associated with maltreatment, almost equivalent to the genetically at-risk children who are not being maltreated. I wanted to get a free graph, so I added this thing in about, I can't see it represented on the same graph, on that paper as their graph. Was it really once a month? I do appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And she wrote back. Hi, Jonathan. I'd just like to point out that this is first name basis now, just in case you missed that. Some contact with an important person definitely made a difference, but the more contact, the better. Most of the children were still in foster care at the time of the study, so contact with a long-standing support person is often limited. That they could identify one such positive resource was the key, and then if they had ongoing contact, it was also essential. The children who could not identify any such support were the most vulnerable to depression following childhood maltreatment. Is that amazing? That's amazing. Not just that she wrote back. I'm over that. Well, no, I'm not quite over that. But that this thing, just once a month, that you could identify one person was key. And then I thought, well, but what is that positive support? So I ripped open the paper again and I went back into it, and this is what it said. During the research, the participants were asked to name the people who they could talk to about personal things, count on to buy the things that they needed, share good things with, get together with and have fun with, and go if they needed. Now, in reading this, I'm not recommending that you now grab yourself who someone can do the shopping for you, okay? But you can see here, this one here might be linked to this one here. 2 and 5. What do 2 and 5 have in common? What's that? Needs. That's it. Your meeting of needs. Thank you. It's resourceful. Being around someone who's a little bit resourceful. And these ones here, fun, sharing, talking, they're all about connection, which is the foundation of the human heart. Also, I mean, you can still, you know, neglect it if you want, but what are you running the risk of now? Well, you're running the risk of quite a few things, because you may not get that connection that you need. It might just happen to you, but you may not get what you need. And on top of that, when there's some sort of complication in your life because you've neglected your heart and you're not aware on it, you may not be able to give a good or adequate explanation for it. I had a guy come to see me who, of course, I change all names when I do illustrations, so this is not his name. But Bill was just impressive as a semi-professional athlete. And if you saw him, you'd go, well, like I did, you're just a handsome man. He's just a handsome man. And he sat down one time. I've been seeing him for about 10 visits. He sat down one time and he just sort of slouched in the chair and he said, I get it. And I said, you get what? The visit before, we spent the whole time talking about how his need for connectedness is legitimate. And he didn't get it. His father was a bully and his mum was chaotic and he didn't get it. And that was owing to him. And I told him that I regretted it, that he didn't get it. And he felt validated. And he said, when you told me that, it just suddenly became real and it became okay, and that's what I tried to do for other people. It was just a lovely moment. But on top of that, because a lot of heart is about the self, you won't have a good sense of your own self. You won't have a good sense of your own identity. And on top of that, you'll make partial responses to yourself, because if you don't understand yourself and what is in your heart, then how can you respond adequately to it? So it's now looking precarious if you do neglect it. Relationships may not get off the ground. In fact, you may simply be left with a range of connection injuries such as worthlessness, betrayal, shame and alienation. That is assuming you could go down, but what if you're quite resilient? You could remain ineffectual. You see, part of the thing is that I don't want to assume when I come to a place like this. There are a couple of mistakes I make. One of the mistakes that I make is that I overlook that some people are suffering. This is a real thing. People suffer. We all suffer. Hearts get broken a lot. But also in this audience, there are people who are doing well, like I mentioned. But this is really important that we do this process and you have your heart in mind so that you can be effective as a person who is functioning well. You see how important it is to keep your heart and your mind. Blessed are the pure in heart because they will see. Now, we're not actually talking about seeing visually, but they'll get it. They'll comprehend it. They'll comprehend God. But you have to have a pure heart to do that. So you have to examine your heart to do that. And so if you neglect your heart, even if you're doing well and you neglect your heart, you may not see. You run a risk. So there are psychological risks, but there are also spiritual risks. You can't facilitate what God actually wants. We might get a reading. Would that be all right if someone had a reading? Who wants to read? Mitch, can you read? Yeah? I'll get your Bible. Oh, so if you could look up Luke 8, 1 to 15. So what I want you to get a sense of, thanks for doing this off the cuff, is that there are psychological consequences for overlooking your heart and there are spiritual consequences for overlooking your heart. And what I want you to do is, as Mitch reads, is that on?
Yep.
As Mitch reads, so 1 to 15, was it?
1 to 15.
Keep your ear listening to verse 12. Okay, go ahead.
I might start in verse 4. That's where the parable starts. Is that okay?
Yep.
So Luke 8, verse 4. As a large crowd was gathering and people were coming to Jesus from every town, he said in a parable, a sower went out to sow his seed. As he sowed, some seed fell along the path. It was trampled on and the birds on the sky devoured it. Other seed fell on the rock. When it grew up, it withered away since it lacked moisture. Other seed fell among thorns. The thorns grew up with it and choked it. Still other seed fell on good ground, and when it grew up, it produced fruit 100 times what was sown. As he said this, he called out, let anyone who has ears to hear listen. And then his disciples asked him, what does this parable mean? And so he said, the secrets of the kingdom of God have been given for you to know, but to the rest it's in parables so that, looking they may not see and hearing they may not understand. This is the meaning of the parable. The seed is the word of God. This is verse 12 now. And the seed along the path are those who have heard. And then the devil comes and takes away the word from their hearts so that they may not believe and be saved. And the seed on the rock are those who, when they hear, receive the word with joy. Having no root, these believe for a while and fall away in a time of testing. As for the seed that fell among thorns, these are the ones who, when they have heard, go on their way and are choked with worries, riches, and pleasures of life and produce no mature fruit. But the seeds in the good ground, those are the ones who, having heard the word with an honest and good heart, hold on to it and by enduring produce fruit.
Thanks so much. So you see here how, verse 12, those along the path, the ones who hear, and then the devil comes and takes away the word from there. Hearts. You want a guaranteed way to no longer believe? just have the word taken from your heart. But what does that mean? If we come back here, you have no affection for it. You have no attachment to the word. You have no connection with the word. It doesn't define you. The word doesn't define you as a person. And it doesn't give you hope. It doesn't fill you with petrol. It doesn't give you motivation. So for those doing well, it's just as important that you keep your heart and your mind for all of us so that the word isn't snatched away from our hearts. Okay. So those are what I wanted to share with you. We're going to wrap things up now. But what I want you to get a sense of is just the way that we started. Your heart is the substance of you, and it's a sacred part of your functioning. If you neglect it, you will neglect it at your own risk, psychologically and spiritually. But you don't have to do that. And thank God for that, because... And I really mean that. No, thank God for that, because nothing feeds, nothing nourishes. There is no greater nutrient for the human heart than the Spirit of God and the Word of God.